Hello, everyone. This is Greg, your host of Goddamn GameCube. Welcome to Season 3. If you enjoy listening to our show, consider subscribing to us on YouTube for exclusive video content. Thank you and enjoy today's episode. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Goddamn GameCube. My name is Greg. I am your host today. My friend Kyle has joined me today. You will remember him from the Doom episode that we did. And today, we are going to be talking about Ghost of Tsushima, a game that we both played. You and I have, I think, slightly different opinions on this. This game was delayed quite a bit during development and during production. It came out on July 17, 2020. It was made by Sucker Punch Games. They are known for Sly Cooper and Infamous. This had a pretty long development cycle, and a joke I'll make pretty early is this game kind of plays like that, that it had a long development cycle. So let's jump right into it. So Ghost of Tsushima, it takes place during the first Mongol invasion of Japan, and your character, Jin Sakai, goes on a mission to defend the island, firstly rescuing your clan leader and uncle, Lord Shimura, and then recruiting allies and other characters to help take back the island. Kyle, before we go into this here, do you have any, you know, initial thoughts, initial impressions about the game before we go into all the nitty gritty?
Yeah, so there's a few things I just want to say, like, right off of the bat. I first heard about this game, I think it was E3 2018.
Okay.
When they had the presentation with the guy playing the Japanese flute.
Yep.
I think later on in this episode, I am a little bit more positive on this game than you are, mm-hmm. although I am not the biggest fan of open world games, but we'll get to that. I also apologize for people listening, because I think later in this episode, I am going to be comparing this to another game that's kind of inevitable, and one that Greg absolutely loves if you're a fan of the show, Sekiro. So
yeah,
I'm going to be making quite a few comparisons. But one thing I wanted to say first is that Greg played this game when it originally came out in 2020 mm-hmm. on the PS4. I had a PS4, but it was just a PS4 Slim, and I didn't have a 4K TV. And knowing how beautiful this game looks, which we'll get into, I wanted to wait until the inevitable PS5 release, which happened with the director's cut.
So you played the director's cut, you played the re-release.
Yes, I played the re-release, and
I think the thing about this game, to me, if we're going to kind of jump right in here, Ghost of Tsushima is a very confusing, like, game to me, like, as an experience. Because I feel like on one hand, it's one of the most, like, unique games I've ever played. Like, I don't know of anything like it in terms of, like, the setting and the time period and how it's an open world game in that setting. But it's also, like, one of the most generic and tropey games I've played in a long time. So I feel like those two giant sort of contrasts are what made this game kind of a strange experience to me. But go ahead.
Yeah, I think a joke that you and I have made before off mic is that this is the Assassin's Creed game we should have gotten back in, like, 2008 or 2009. I mean, like, Assassin's Creed, another joke we make is that they've essentially just become the Magic Treehouse book series. Like, oh, hey, pick a time in history and we'll make a game about that, except they're not good.
Right. And I feel like this game is I feel like ever since, like, 2007, people wanted an Assassin's Creed Japan so bad.
It just makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, why would you not, you know, ninjas and samurais existed
no
in feudal Japan. Why would you not make a game then?
I don't know. But this game is essentially that. So the thing about this game that I think bothered me the most is that there are a lot of, like, tropey things in open world games that I feel like we all kind of had enough of, like, 10 years ago.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. Like, you know, there are a ton of aesthetic collectibles. There's a ton of, like, material hunting. Like, you know, I feel like you find a bunch of, like, spots where you can, like, compose a haiku, but it's purely aesthetic. And you can find Mongol banners, and you can, there's a bunch of different colors. You can make your armor and you can dye it and stuff like that. There's, like, forts and bases clearing. It just feels very dated.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to say pretty early on is that this game feels like an amalgamation of several other open world games and does a decent good job at them. So the obvious one would be Assassin's Creed with like go here, capture the base, or you know the Mongol forts and unlock parts of the map. I also get some Red Dead Redemption 1 vibes.
Yeah, where sure.
You can slow down time to like shoot Mongol enemies or even wild creatures with like a bow, things of that nature.
Also, and, a lot of the mission structures are like break, stealth, insta fail. There's a bunch of like tailing and follow missions. It just feels very dated, like in that way.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to say is like you mentioned the haikus where you just sit.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that I'm going to compare to Sekiro here.
Sure.
Where this game is very upfront that it is a cinematic experience.
Sure. Okay.
Like, let's just get it out of this way. How fucking gorgeous is this game?
I mean, it looks awesome.
Like, even on PS5, this is, I mean, I know you've said this before on a previous episode. I think it was the Games Radar one. Mm-hmm. Where you've taken so many screenshots in this game, and I was in the same camp because there were so many things that were like, wow, that just looks beautiful.
And I never take screenshots when I play games, and I feel like I took a ton. I think with this game, with the visuals, it's just, this art style is amazing. The color palette is wonderful. And I just can't believe like how well optimized it is too. It plays awesome too.
Oh yeah, actually that's a good point. I don't know what your experience was on the PS4, but from what I remember, the load times were basically
it was butter.
Yeah, they're literally non-existent on PS5.
Yeah,
like I have fast traveled from one side of the island to the other, and it is literally less than a second. It's unbelievable.
Did you play any of the Kurosawa mode?
I tried it. I think it's incredibly cool. Especially if you're a fan of those movies. I have not seen any, but I respect them. You're doing yourself a disservice by playing on it
for
a long period of time, because there are just so many beautiful landscapes in this game. I would say that's probably one of its biggest strengths. If you're going to give me an open world, make it pretty.
Yep.
And this game succeeds in that department. Now, what I was saying earlier where the comparison to Sekiro, this game kind of feels like, what if we made Yojimbo a video game? And like I said, it's very upfront with the fact that it's cinematic, and there is a little bit of negative connotation to that, which I'll get into in just a moment. Sekiro is much more action-based, which I think for me is, I prefer that. So in terms of the cinematic qualities, one thing I kind of don't like at all about this game is you cannot skip any of the cutscenes.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing it for the first time,
I guess that doesn't matter.
You're probably not going to notice it. But if you ever did want to replay it, it's one of those things that's like, oh, God damn it. Why didn't you just let me hold the X button or something like that? And in addition to that, this is yet another thing I think Sekiro does slightly better, where in the opening fight against Genichiro, you can actually beat him. And if I remember correctly, there is a slightly different cutscene.
Yeah, of how your arm falls out. Yeah.
In this game, because you mentioned it, the very first thing that happens is that the Mongol invasion leader, his name is Khotun Khan. I thought he was acted brilliantly. I don't know the actor's name. You fight him on the bridge leading up to the castle, and he's very, very tough, so you're probably going to die. But I did watch a video of somebody who beat him. It's a little disappointing because nothing happens. You have to die.
Sure. I mean, they force you down the path,
which I find really upsetting.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because there are some aspects of this game, because we're about to get into the gameplay a little bit. But what I wanted to bring up is, because this game is a very on-purpose cinematic and aesthetic experience, there are some things like in the game, but in the story, don't make a lot of sense together that I wanted to talk about. What's the word for this? Ludonarrative dissonance?
Hey, Nick, you listening?
Yeah, hey, Nick, you listening? So let's talk about this a little bit. So in the game, pretty early on, you learn how to stealth kill and like sneak kill enemies. And this aspect of the game is like constantly derided, like by your like your allies as dishonorable and cowardly. But there is zero gameplay demerits or trade-offs to battling enemies in like dishonorable ways. Like you can do it as much as you want for zero penalty. And it makes sense when we start talking about maybe the end of the story, why they force you down that path. But it was a little strange to me how I feel like your allies are in the way the game plays. They keep saying, don't do that. Don't play like that. But there's no penalty.
There's even cutscenes like flashbacks of, you with your uncle getting samurai training.
Yes.
And it's like, no, you fight them head on.
Right.
Like a samurai.
Right. Right.
And then it's counterposed with you becoming the ghost.
Right. Right. And so
stealth kills.
Right. And so let's talk about combat a little bit and sort of, you know, whatever it is, whether it's stealth combat or open combat a little. So this game, I think, gives you just enough in the upgrade category to make it feel like there's a little bit of depth to the game. Like there are a couple of armor sets. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't played it in about a year. There's only you have kind of your main sword and your main stealth sword, which you upgrade. I think there's just enough there to keep you going, but something that bothered me, I don't know what you think, I feel like they really, really hammered down on this is an aesthetic experience. By that I mean so many of the upgrades are colors and dyes, and it's almost like Samurai Fashion Simulator a lot of the time.
Yeah, a little bit, and I gotta be honest, I don't really mind it
okay.
that much. But since we're talking about the combat...
Sure.
I do have to give the game some credit mm-hmm. here, where it's not a pushover.
No, it's not.
I originally started playing this game on hard, and it does incentivize you to switch between all the different stances.
Yeah.
Like if the sword enemies are coming at you, I think you have to, is it the earth stance?
Yeah.
Help, like you attack with that and that breaks their posture.
Mm-hmm.
The big guys, you have to do the moon stance. You originally unlock it. So I do give it props for... incentivizing you to actually switch between them.
And the game is not that easy. Like, even on normal.
I actually turned it back down to normal.
Yeah.
Because, and this is one of the few negatives I personally have with the game, mm-hmm. I don't like the one-on-one duels.
Okay.
Much.
We will talk about quests as well. I think there are a lot of problems with quests in this game. But what I want to say about combat is, like, there is really no lock-on system in the game. When I played it on original release, the enemy you're looking at is the enemy that you will like go and attack. It's almost like an assumed targeting. And I feel like you and I have talked about this off mic where the combat in this game is not incredibly precise, but that doesn't mean it's bad. Like it actually is fun and you can get into a rhythm, but I just wish it was a little bit more precise than it is. Like, did you have any thoughts about the flow of combat?
I thought there was a lock-on, but maybe
in the original PS4, there isn't. How it works is the enemy, it's almost like assumed the enemy that you're looking at or facing, you will target. There isn't a Dark Souls system where you click and it switches between enemies. You have to sort of face the different enemies for it to target.
Okay.
And it's not incredibly precise. You also get some tools and stuff too, like different like smoke bombs and stuff you can throw, which I thought was fine.
I used a lot of those.
Yeah,
I really
enjoyed
using those. But yeah, that's another thing too, to keep the comparisons rolling.
Sure.
Obviously, Sekiro is much
tighter,
more refined and tight than this game. But I mean, that's okay. It's obviously...
Obviously a way different game.
They're both very different games.
Yeah, sure.
And, not to be a dead horse, I've made it apparent that I do think between these two, I'd rather be playing Sekiro when it comes to the combat.
God, I feel like that's a stomach-churning decision for me.
You know,
in different
sometimes
ways.
You just got to do it.
Yeah, I know. So you touched on quests a little bit, but let's talk about it. Because unfortunately, I do think overall the quests are terrible. Like in this game, I think let's talk about it. Wait, before you go there, I feel like all the side quests are bad too, where there's so many follow this person and don't break stealth, or trail this person, or go clear this fort, and you found the duels frustrating. I don't know what you think about quests as a whole, but I think it's mostly bad.
So I do agree with like the trailing stuff.
Sure.
I do find that pretty annoying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you, neither of us are huge like GTA fans.
No, really. Not at all.
I know you hate
I'm
them.
Not. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I think the only game of theirs I truly enjoy is like the first Red Dead Redemption.
Sure. I mean, the thing about the quests in this game, this is what's tough for me, where I didn't love the one-on-one duels either, but I feel like the legendary quests are like the only interesting quests in the game.
Those are interesting, but I don't think every side quest is necessarily bad.
Okay.
There were a few standout ones that I found really interesting.
Sure.
For instance, I believe it's in the third act of the game where you're in the, is it Jōgaku province?
Okay.
It's the snowy province.
Yeah, sure.
At the top of the island. And you come across this like little mill town.
Yeah.
And you notice that like it's incredibly silent. It's just kind of off-putting.
Sure, okay.
So you talk to the residents and it's like kind of apparent that something's off.
Okay.
So you talk to one of them, it's like, oh, just follow me over here. Which again, yeah, it's a trailing thing.
But yeah.
It's behind a corner.
Sure.
And he mentions that like the Mongols came by and you investigate the town and you notice that like they essentially tortured the entire town.
Sure.
So you see like claw marks and
yeah,
things like that. And then you confront the first guy that you talk to in the village who sold them all out.
Ah, got
it.
And
you literally kill him.
Got it. Okay.
You're like, you betrayed your people and they're dead now. And Jin's just like, I'm taking your life. And literally that's what happens.
Wow. Okay.
I found that to be really cool because I didn't expect
maybe
that.
Maybe I missed that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, so that's another thing I wanted to bring up.
Sure.
This is, for me, the first game I've ever actually platinumed.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Sure.
Which is...
I mean, that's saying a lot. I mean, we play a lot of games.
Yeah. I mean, I don't usually go for it.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go back to Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And the remastered version for PS5 because your trophies carry over. And I had like a few left, so I platinum that. So now I have 2 platinum trophies. Look at me. But with Ghost of Tsushima, one thing I did kind of appreciate is that even though there are a lot of collectibles around the world,
sure,
not necessarily the fox shrines and the haikus,
yeah,
because you do have to do all those and whatnot, there are like these Mongol records and things,
yeah.
And you don't actually have to collect all of them in order to get one of the trophies,
sure,
which is kind of cool. I noticed that because mm-hmm. by the time I had beaten the game, I had like almost all of them,
sure,
anyway, which is neat, but that's kind of also a little bit of a negative in the sense that I felt compelled to get the platinum because with open world games, I usually just do everything once and then
yeah that's definitely an aspect of this game where I just don't see why you would play it again.
I mean, I could see why somebody would want to. I just don't.
I wouldn't. I no way. Like, I think a big part about this game, like before we start talking about the story, I don't want people to think that I think this game is bad. I just find this game frustrating aesthetically to me. Where I mean, I shouldn't say that either. I find this game frustrating on a almost like a mantra level, almost like a directional level, where you have this beautiful game and I've never seen anything like it, but everything you do feels like a slog. Like, it's just, there are so, sure, there maybe there are a handful of quests that are pretty good, but there's a lot of slog here.
No, I can totally understand that, and I do see where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
didn't you always feel like when you were, before you went on to the different parts of the island, like, I'm going to go check off all these check boxes, and I'm going to go do all these tasks?
I didn't actually do that until about halfway through the game.
Sure.
But I do understand completely. Because before I finished the game, that was definitely what I
was
doing.
Yeah,
like,
it's just
I'm gonna go get all the fox shrines,
all the hot springs. Feels like I'm making just a big checklist of sloggy things to do.
Actually, that just reminded me.
Sure.
One of the things, even though it is, you know, go here and collect the thing.
Yeah.
One thing I definitely do appreciate was it the Inari shrines.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There's 16 or 17 of them in total. Maybe they added like one or two in the director's cut. Every single one of them is different.
Yep.
And I think that was really cool.
They didn't do any copy pasta.
Yeah. You do the same thing essentially where you climb through the environment
sure.
and get to the shrine and pray. But no two of them are the same, which I do have to give them props because every single one of them was unique, and I thought that was kind of cool.
No, I agree. It's just, and I think this is a well-made game. I just think maybe, I don't know. I don't want to put ideas into people.
Can I say something that I think you'll agree with?
Sure.
This is far and away better than any Assassin's Creed game that's come out this past
10 years. Oh, I mean, absolutely. But I also feel like I've played this game so many times before, but I haven't. You know, it frustrates me, but I don't want to keep banging on that same point. What I'd love to do next is I want to talk about like what made me sort of like the game, or when I was playing through this game, I wasn't loving it. I remember when you and I were talking off mic while I was playing it, I'm like, man, I know you were excited for it. And like, I don't hate it, but I'm like, I don't know what I think. But what I want to talk about next is actually the story and some of the plot points. Go ahead.
Before we go into that,
just
to appease some of our viewers, did you play in English or Japanese?
Oh, wow. Great question. I believe I played in English.
So if I remember correctly.
Yes.
In the original release of the game, which I did find this to be a little weird, and they fixed it in the director's cut. Even though this game is very, very, very much Japan.
Yeah.
Apparently the default language was English. Yes. So when you played in the Japanese language, the mouth movements didn't line up.
Were in English.
They lined up in the director's cut.
Oh, okay. Got it. So they did correct that.
Yeah.
That's
and I'm
cool.
just like, you know what? This game went so far out of its way to be as
authentic
as possible.
Yeah.
I played it in Japanese with subtitles.
That's great.
Like, and having listened to the original voices, I'm kind of glad I did.
Sure.
I don't think they're bad performances.
I don't think they're bad.
English. I think they sound so much better in the original language. And actually, you know what? That's another thing I wanted to bring up that I find to be kind of cool. All of the Mongolians speak modern Mongolian.
That's great. That's really cool.
And apparently the Japanese language they use in the game, they purposely throw in like really dated words to sell the immersion.
You know, I do want to talk about the story, but I think it should be said that I do think that Sucker Punch did put their research in to make this an authentic game. Authentic enough that, you know, it can attract a worldly, you know, audience and still sort of people understand what's going on.
Listen, if the Island of Tsushima, like... praises your game.
Yeah, I'm sure you did a pretty good job.
I think, if I remember correctly, the director of the whole game is like some sort of ambassador on the island now.
Oh, wow. I mean,
something like that.
I mean, you know, they did do a good job like respecting the history while, you know, I feel like, you know, by not, you know, over grandizing the whole thing. But I mean, they did a good job. But anyway, I do want to talk about the story because this is where I was surprised in a good way, especially towards the middle and end of the game. So I'd love to talk about that next.
Okay.
So as you go through the game, because of your reputation around the island and your successes against the Mongols, you are known as the Ghost of Tsushima. People think you're some sort of spirit or some sort of entity that's helping the island. This also carries like an infamous and like dishonorable moniker because of sort of how you betray your samurai code. They're sort of going back into that where, you know, you stealth killing people, you know, you defeating Mongols and sort of leaving without a trace. There is this weird sort of, also there's probably a cultural difference that I either don't understand or I don't know that enough history about, where, you know, that sort of honorable combat and how Jin betrays that is a big part of the game. Mm-hmm. So, and as you go through the game, like one of your allies, I think it's Ryuzo is how you pronounce this. Ryuzo of the Straw Hats, like, ends up betraying you because the Straw Hats are your ally, but I guess they're starving. And Ryuzo, one of your friends, actually takes out a bounty to kill you.
Yeah, that's at the end
of, for the money.
That's at the end of Act One.
Yeah, exactly. And so he sort of ends a lifelong partnership, which I thought was pretty surprising, but I said, okay, you know, whatever, pretty standard. But what I really want to get into specifically is the end of Act Two, and how they set this up and how the game goes from there really drew me in. And I think I enjoyed the game and had a higher level of respect for the game after this point. So specifically, when you get to the end of Act Two, there's this sequence where you're trying to take back Castle Shimura. And Jin has this idea to poison the alcohol supply of the Mongols because taking on the Mongols head on in the castle, they're losing a lot of allies.
It's actually not alcohol, by the way. It's fermented horse's milk.
Okay, got it. I thought it was an alcohol. So it's food from water. It's supplies.
Yeah.
Essentially. So you suggest doing this because you're suffering huge casualties trying to take back the castle. However, your uncle, Lord Shimura, does not want you to do this because it is dishonorable. You should face Mongols in open combat. However, what happens, you can probably guess. Jin chooses to poison the Mongols and you are successful. And so you do end up poisoning them. However, Lord Shimura is furious with you and he arrests you at the end of this section. Yeah, go ahead.
I believe you also kill Ryuzo.
Yes. Yeah. In that same section, you do end up, I believe you have a one-on-one duel with your childhood friend who had the bounty, who chose to take the bounty on you, and you do kill him.
Yep.
So a lot happens at this point in the game. So anyway, it becomes this almost moral quandary that they start getting into where you are defeating the Mongols, you're helping your people, you're helping your uncle, but the Shogun and your uncle, they do not like how you're handling business, essentially. And so your uncle arrests you, and there's an escape sequence, but I believe at this point in the game, you leave a letter for you either sneak back into your uncle's castle or something, and you leave a letter for him that you want him to join you in the final battle.
Yeah, so I'll
go ahead.
Go elaborate a little bit more.
Sure.
At the beginning of Act 3, you are in the prison cell.
Yes.
Because like you mentioned, your uncle Shimura arrests you.
Yes.
So you escape and you ride into the Jogaku province.
The snowy region.
Area.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a cutscene that's a little disheartening because they shoot your horse in the leg.
Yeah.
And then as you're riding up into the wasteland, your horse just dies.
Yeah, sad.
Was a little upsetting. You stumble across like a village that the Mongols have like, you know, burnt and pillaged.
Yeah.
And then I believe you meet up with, is it Yuna?
Yeah. And is that when you discover the Mongols are using your poison against you? I believe it's that point in the game.
Yeah, either there or very shortly thereafter that you figure that out. Anyway, after that point, there's, you know, the central town in Jogaku. And like you mentioned, I don't remember which quest it was, like in which order, but yes, you do eventually go back to where you were arrested and you sneak back into the castle to leave a note for your uncle Shimura.
Essentially telling you to, you are my uncle. I know a way to defeat the Mongols. Join me at the final battle. Essentially
it's a last ditch effort. You don't expect it to work.
Yeah. So essentially you're at a moral quandary here in the game where you poison the Mongols to take back the castle. You completely betrayed your honor, but it worked. But as a consequence, which was unexpected, the Mongols are using your own poison against your people. So you think, I thought as a player, maybe my uncle was right and that maybe I shouldn't have done this. But anyway, as we get to the end of the game, I actually thought this quest was pretty good. I really liked actually the last mission, sort of the last hurrah when, you know, you go to fight Khotun Khan. How do you pronounce that?
I believe
Khotun Khan.
Yeah.
I actually thought that was a pretty cool battle. Like you're kind of going through the port and your uncle does join you. That is the big sort of selling point here is your uncle does join you in the final battle to stop Khotun Khan. And now, Kyle, when we got to this point in the game, I said, okay, this game was all right. I don't hate it. I said, okay, if the game ended like this.
Are you talking about the last mission?
Oh, yeah. I thought, okay, if the game ended here, that's fine. However, now, if you end up playing this game, you may want to turn this off like at this point, because this is where I didn't think this game would get me right in the feels, but it does. So, the last mission, after you defeat Khotun Khan or whatever, blah, 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 you end up going back to your family estate, like with your uncle.
Yes.
And you end up sort of walking and talking, and it's very serene and nice, but you sort of get this feeling that something isn't quite right, because you and him are sort of talking about your family and your history, and they set up this like beautiful sort of vista like they do, where you're on what, like the main, I don't want to call it like a,
at the family grave.
You're at the family grave of like, of your family. And what Lord Shimura tells you is that the Shogun of Japan has ordered your execution. He's ordered the execution of the Ghost of Tsushima, which is your character, Jin, and that your uncle has been asked to carry it out.
Yeah, and it's really, like, you think this would be, like, a big bombastic situation.
No.
No, it's very serene and calm.
Yeah.
You're both, like, praying at the graves.
Yeah,
and he's just like, I'm sorry I have to do this, but I have to do this.
Dude, and I said, oh, no. Like, yeah. Don't do that. And so, you end up having, I said, you know what? For all the shit that I threw in this game, they did a pretty good job setting this up.
I really, really enjoyed this ending.
I did, too. So, essentially, you have a one-on-one duel with your uncle, and you end up defeating him. However, they throw you another curveball, which I thought was, they got me right in the feels. Of course, Samurai Honor, you defeated your uncle in combat. He asks you to finish him off. He asks you to execute him, and you can choose to execute your uncle or not. And I said, fuck. And I chose not to.
I did the same thing.
And I think personally, please like give me your input on this. I think personally, the whole journey that Jin went on, and he, you know, he betrayed his honor very early on. It seems like he didn't really want to be a samurai. He just wanted his home back.
Yeah.
And I felt like if my uncle is the only family member I have left, I am not going to execute this guy. I'm going to essentially say to him, I think the way of the samurai is wrong and you can live. Go. And that's what I think. I don't think the way my personal morality and how Jin acted the whole game, I don't think you can do that. I don't know. You made the same decision I did, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think you also mentioned that, like, it would be in the samurai code to finish him off.
And you're not
a samurai, so why would you do that? I chose not to just because of the fact that, like, the entire game, the majority of your opponents are Mongols.
Yeah.
And with the exception of a few, like...
Legendary quests and stuff.
Legendary quests and Ryuzo and things like that. Essentially, all of them are enemies of the state.
Yeah.
And you get to this point of the game, and while, yes, he is technically an enemy now because he's fulfilling his orders, it just didn't really sit right with me.
No, me either. I couldn't do it. Like, and it just, it seems like, I think it is kind of in the gaming sort of internet world where killing your uncle is the bad ending. Like, you shouldn't do that. That's kind of the vibe that I get.
And also, like, I don't think Jin... killed for fun.
No, he did not.
It was, like you said, literally just to protect the island.
Yeah, and after that happened and I saw the credits roll, I said, okay, like, listen, this is an audio-only podcast, but I'm nodding my head. Yep. I said, okay, I didn't expect this game to really get me, like, right in the feels, to be like, okay, I think the thing about Ghost of Tsushima is a lot was made about the setting and the visuals and the authenticity of the world and the setting. I didn't think the story would get me.
Yeah, they did a very good job with the narrative, I will agree.
Big payoff.
Yep.
And so really how the game ends is you're in exile because you let your uncle go, but you are the Ghost of Tsushima and you can't be a member of society.
Right.
So isn't that just like a feel good, feel bad sort of ending where Jesus Christ, you save your uncle's fucking ass like so many times. And
I really appreciate games that end on kind of like, I don't want to say
melancholy.
Yeah. Like a melancholy ending. One that comes to mind, if you remember it, the end of Red Dead Redemption 1.
Oh my God. Yeah, sure.
Where you get gunned down.
Yeah.
And then, like, you think that's the end of the game, but then you realize, oh, wait, now you're playing as John Marston's kid.
I love it.
And you go hunt down the people that killed your father, and that's how the game ends.
It's really cool. Very tastefully done.
Yeah, I really like endings like that that sort of bum you out, but not to, like, a depressing level.
It's bittersweet.
Yeah, I like endings like that. I feel like they stick out more than good ones.
No, I agree. So, Kyle, I do want to end this segment with us talking about open world games in the future. But before we do that, I'd like to maybe have some very quick final thoughts on, I almost said Red Dead, very quick final thoughts on Ghost of Tsushima and if you could grade it for me.
You go first.
Wow. Okay. So I really already said it. I do think this game is a chore to play. It's a little bit of a slog. I think that personally, I know some people disagree. The game looks amazing. It's optimized. It plays like a dream. It looks like a dream, but I do think it's a chore. And it did have a big payoff at the end, so I don't think it's all bad. And it did leave me with a good taste in my mouth. I think off mic, I think I told you on a bad day, it's a C+ for me. And on a good day, it's like a B-. Why don't you maybe give me a sentence or two and grade it for me?
Yeah, I think for me, I'm a bit more positive on it than
sure.
you. Actually, before I do give it a grade,
yeah,
one thing, I'll talk about it very briefly.
Sure.
Since I got the director's cut of this game, I was also able to play the Iki Island expansion.
Yeah, sure.
And I'll just briefly talk about that. If you were interested in playing that, if you've played the game before, I recommend playing it after you beat the main story.
Okay.
Because there are some cutscenes throughout the main story where, like, you have flashbacks of your father getting killed. And they actually do elaborate on it a little bit in the Iki Island expansion, which I thought was interesting. You essentially learn to forgive yourself for not being able to protect your father.
Right, because that's kind of how the game starts. I kind of forgot about that. Yeah.
It was cool. I mean,
you think it's necessary or no to play Iki Island?
I don't think it's totally necessary.
But it's not bad.
It was there. I was enjoying myself.
Also,
They also make a little bit more use of the PS5 controller.
Sure.
Where you have, like, these monkey shrines.
Yeah.
And you you lure the monkey in to pet it.
Yeah.
And you're like, if you remember from Twilight Princess, when you're howling to the song.
Sure, sure.
And it's kind of like Rock Band, you have to get within
the lines. Yeah, yeah.
It's like that, and you have to manually hold the controller up and down.
Sure.
I thought the narrative in the Iki Island expansion was cool. I don't know if it's 100% necessary, but if you've not played this game before and you get the PS5 version, yep, I'd say it's worth checking out. Getting back to
what
you originally said with grading the game, I think for me, I would probably give this, like, somewhere between a B and a B plus.
So a little bit higher than me.
A little bit higher. I mean, we'll get into it right after this, but, like, in terms of open world games, this is probably one of the best atmospheres.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a word I haven't used a lot in this episode, and I really should have been.
Mm-hmm.
The atmosphere of this game, I think, is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it harkens back. Well, I shouldn't say harkens back, but I haven't felt super immersed in a game like this based on the visuals and the overall tone and setting since Fallout 3.
Sure. Okay. That's a big comparison.
Because, you know, I fucking,
because we stand that game.
Yeah, it's a good game, guys. I know New Vegas is better. You can shut up in the comments.
I think that's a really good time for us to maybe go into the final maybe thing that we were going to talk about on this episode.
Yeah,
which is almost like where open world games are now and the future of them. Because I think, listen, Kyle, you and I are old men now. We're we're 30 or approaching 30. And I think for me, if you had asked me in 2008, what kind of games do I love? It's open world games, Oblivion, Fallout, like pick it. I think in 2021, I'm a little tired of them now. And I think there are just too many of them. And what you and I have talked about a lot off mic is we now are more interested in these more centralized, tighter experiences. I don't need these 30, 40, 50 hour like go collect them all sort of games anymore. I don't feel like I need that anymore. I don't know how you feel. Maybe if you want to summarize
Greg mentioned it, but it's an audio only, but I'm nodding my head as he's saying all these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when we were in high school, when Greg and I first knew each other, like Oblivion, Fallout 3, Fallout New Vegas, which like freshman in college, that was our jam.
Yeah.
Fallout 3 being one of my favorite games ever.
Yeah.
New Vegas up there with it. So with Ghost of Tsushima, I actually looked at my playtime when I finished everything I did, including the Iki Island expansion, and it was like 55, 56 hours.
Okay, it was a chunk.
Which is a chunk of time, definitely, but that's kind of tame when compared to some other open world games.
Yeah, sure.
Which is kind of crazy to say because that is a lot of time. But yeah, open world games for me just become less and less appealing.
Yeah, me too, man.
Like, I don't know. Just get, like, with a lot of them, it's just like, do you really need an open world for this game?
I agree.
Is it in service to the game?
Yep. Or are you just padding it out?
Yeah.
That's where I we're done talking about Ghost of Tsushima. That's where I feel like that's why this game feels like it was in development for so long. Where it feels like it has all these pieces of open world games from the past 10 years. And I feel like in 2020 and 2021, I'm now kind of over that. Where you and I have said it to death, I'm more interested in these tighter experiences. Does this, like you said it really well, does this service the game? And I do think in Ghost of Tsushima it does.
This is one of the exceptions where I would say it does.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I've said it before.
Yeah.
They put so much work into making this as authentic as possible.
Sure.
It's not the biggest open world game I've ever played. I think everything is just really, you know, pretty to look at.
And they did a good job realizing the island.
Yeah. And another thing, we didn't even mention this, but one thing I thought was really cool is as you're riding around and there's no combat, there's no UI.
That's cool too.
So
yeah.
The entire screen is open. Just open, and it just, it's really cool. This game, I think, kind of warrants the open world.
Do you feel like maybe, I'm not going to say that this is the last open world game I'm going to play, but do you feel like it's the end of an era for games almost? Where like this game, it showed the past 10 years of open world games. I think there are going to be open world games after this, but my interest is in them is low.
Well, I mean, you say that, but you know damn well we're both going to play fucking Elden Ring.
Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah, I'm a total hypocrite when it comes to that.
I don't know if you saw, so we're recording this and it's like, mid-October?
Yeah.
Like 2 days ago, I don't know if you saw it, but they had a teased gameplay trailer for Elden Ring, and it's kind of rough, but it does look a little open world-ish.
Okay.
Which...
You're saying I'm going to have to eat my words in February?
We're going to have to, yeah. Oh, yeah. Today, they just announced that it's getting delayed.
Sure. Kyle, thank you for being here. Really enjoyed talking about Ghost of Tsushima with you. Thanks for being here. And that is going to do it for Goddamn GameCube, and we'll see you guys next time.